lovers, and welcome to the Liberty Mike podcast, broadcasting from an undisclosed location in the heart of Dixie. I am Michael, and I am here with Liberty Larry.
How's it going?
Doing okay. How are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So what are we drinking on over here?
Just a whiskey sour that I forgot to add the bitters to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you may say it's just a whiskey sour, but it's a pretty high-end whiskey sour. Like, this wasn't just pour some mix and some whiskey and call it a whiskey sour.
No. That's true. I squeezed my own lemons.
Yeah. And high-end cherry in there. Like, that's we're not looking at the radioactive-looking cherry.
The candied cherries or whatever the people call. Maraschino.
Yeah. The artificial maraschino cherries.
Yeah, I don't know why they call them maraschino cherries. I hate those things. Like, yeah, it's just not even a natural color.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people use those. I don't get it. These are Luxardo. These are like the creme de la creme of
cherries.
Of cherries, yeah.
Yeah. You can tell it in the drink. It makes the drink.
Yeah. And I used a Jack Daniel's single barrel. I usually use a rye whiskey.
Oh yeah.
Particularly when I mix sours, but most cocktails I usually use a rye whiskey.
Yeah.
But there's something about the Tennessee whiskey in a whiskey sour, particularly. It just seems to fit.
It's just right.
Yeah. So anyway, but I did forget the bitters.
Yeah, well, it's still very tasty.
I made my own syrup, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Demerara sugar. That's the way to go. Like 1.5 to 1.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess they call it a semi-rich simple syrup. Okay. So there's like a rich simple syrup where you use twice as much sugar as you do water to mix.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do, actually, because like you have to heat up the water it's essentially like a super saturation of sugar in the water.
Yeah.
I think it's too much and it's too thick.
Yeah.
But like just your normal simple syrup, that's 1 to 1. It's not enough.
Yeah.
So you go in between 1.5 to 1 is the right ratio.
Yeah.
You still have to heat up the water, but you don't sit there stirring, trying to get it all to mix for like an hour.
Right.
And
just dissolve.
It's easier to pour.
Yeah.
I use oil and vinegar type bottles.
Oh yeah. You know, the ones with the little spigot.
Yeah. So for the syrups, I do. So if you use the really thick syrups, it won't pour
like
out of
there. Drips out of there. We're going to be here all day to get this out.
And who wants to take that much time?
Yeah.
So anyway, I like sours, man. I'm good at sours.
Yeah. Like I said, I love them. Like, this is a very good drink.
Well, thank you. I actually thought that we would start off with this Press Act thing.
Okay.
I find this interesting. And I had looked into it before and I didn't think much of it. But they brought it up like a week ago on No Agenda. And I can't figure out what's going on with it at this moment that they brought it up.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I think Jim Jordan's House, right? He's not Senate.
I think he's in the House.
They played a clip of Jim Jordan asking this reporter about it. And anyway. So, but what they were talking about, I was like, no, I got to look this thing up again. Like, maybe I missed something. Because it was introduced in December, and it passed the House in, like, January.
Yeah.
Or February. So it's been sitting in the Senate all this time. Like, it was introduced and read in the Senate and went to committee, and that's, as far as I know, that's where it is.
How long can they sit like that?
Forever, essentially. Really? I mean, I don't think that there's any kind of real time frame on it.
Okay, so they can pick it back up like a year later or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what they did with the Patriot Act.
Yeah, right. This thing been sitting there and like stalled out forever. And
yeah, I mean, I assume that it had been introduced before and they were finally able to push it through after 9/11.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly the pathway that it took or if it was just something that was written that they were waiting for a reason to introduce it
That was my always my understanding, but it could have been introduced, and like I say, they just saw the window.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, this is the Protect Reporters from Exploitative State Spying Act.
Oh well, that sounds Press good. Act. I mean, we want that, right?
Sure.
All right.
It it's prohibits the federal government from compelling journalists and specified third parties and. Their specified third parties are like telecom companies, social media companies, essentially third party services that would hold records of the journalist.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? It prohibits the federal government from compelling the journalists and these specified third parties from forcing them to disclose, compelling them to disclose protected information. Except in limited circumstances.
Okay.
All right.
What are the limited circumstances?
The limited circumstances are such as stated it and I didn't write it down.
Like imminent terror threat.
Yeah, imminent terror threat, yeah. Imminent violence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, which really means that they can ignore it kind of anytime
whenever they feel like pushing it. Yeah.
But here's why I'm irritated about this. First off, they're protecting these companies from being compelled by the government to disclose private information.
Yeah.
And it is actually, it's like particular information that they're not. That they're being protected from being compelled to disclose. It's not even like everything.
Oh yeah.
All right. But from my perspective, and I think most constitutional scholars and lawyers and so forth, who are honest,
yeah.
That's what the Fourth Amendment is.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Do we need to pass more laws to enforce the Constitution?
Yeah. So essentially to me, this looks like legislation to give Fourth Amendment protections to journalists.
Yeah, right. Specifically.
Specifically. That's the other problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, to start with, the Fourth Amendment is supposed to give you securities in your private communications from any kind of... Well, it's supposed to secure your privacy and communications from the government without a warrant. Yeah. So... if they don't have a warrant, they should never be able to access any of this stuff anyway.
Yeah.
And, of course, the warrant has to have all those things that are specified in the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be the claim under oath or affirmation. There has to be, I mean, there's a big list. In fact, I'm going to pull it. I'm just going to read the Fourth Amendment. It might take me a second to pull this up. Because that's really what this law seems to be doing, as far as I can tell, is giving Fourth Amendment protections to journalists, and they should already have them. There's no need for a legislation to protect a constitutional right.
Yeah,
well, the Constitution does that.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing. They've done this with the Second Amendment too.
Right,
like states have like passed laws like reinforcing the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Which I mean, at the state level, like I'm kind of okay with it because at the state level, they're trying to protect you from the federal government.
Sure,
And I can kind of get down with that. This is a little suspicious with it coming from the federal government.
Yeah, so the Fourth Amendment says. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Right? And yeah. And notice that it's and. That means all of these things have to be true.
Apply. Yeah, absolutely.
And... I understand that things have changed, like the world is a different place from when this was written. So they don't say that your information in the cloud
yeah.
is protected. But that was the intent.
That is the idea, the spirit behind it.
Yeah. The whole idea was that all of your private writings and communications are to be protected.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even if they're not on paper anymore.
It makes me wonder if maybe that the reason we're not just leaning on the Constitution for this and we want to pass some kind of special legislation is specifically for the carve-outs. As far as like, well, you know, because the Constitution doesn't say anything about imminent terror threat.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what this whole deal is, well, we need a way to scapegoat this when we want to.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to do that is to pass some legislation, never mind the Constitution.
Yeah, but that doesn't work either. In our legal system, the Constitution is the supreme law.
Well,
so the legislation doesn't override the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't provide that carve out. Therefore, that carve out does not exist.
Yeah, but until it goes to the Supreme Court and gets overturned, it's that's the law that's enforced.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it shouldn't work that way. That's not how the system was designed to work. But we both know that's how it does work.
And here's the other thing is that they're talking about this in terms of the First Amendment as well and press freedoms.
Yeah.
But press freedoms isn't journalist freedoms.
That's another one of those things where people like to conflate it because we are the press. Like the people are the press.
Yeah. Well, the press in the First Amendment refers to essentially distribution.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They were talking about the printing press at that time. They didn't mean a group of people with a particular profession.
Yeah, with a
they meant
with
the
a
ability,
J school license.
Yeah, they meant the ability to disseminate the information shouldn't be infringed by the government.
Yeah.
Right. So as far as I'm concerned, what they're doing is they're creating a class of people called journalists.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure soon that you'll need to have a license.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth. But I consider what we do journalism.
Oh, it is. Like, it is.
Yeah.
I'm not
out there researching this stuff myself in the sense of, like, I'm not an investigative journalist. But I would say that I'm more of a journalist than this girl whose name I forget who's been up in front of Congress talking about that because she was a newsreader.
Yeah, right. She was being told what to say.
Yeah, she's a little more than that. That's unfair, probably. But
well, in a lot of cases, it's not, though.
But, you know, there's a lot of these talking heads on the major networks that call themselves journalists that all they do is read off a prompter. They don't do any of their own research.
Yeah.
They just read what's told to them. I at least go out and read people that are out there in the field digging stuff, information up.
Yeah.
And try and amalgamate it and give it out in ways that people can understand that they wouldn't hear otherwise.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I think that makes me more of a journalist than most of those news readers.
Yeah, that's fair.
Including the nude readers on Naked News. Does that still exist? I wonder.
I heard it does. I haven't.
They should be called nude readers. I don't know if they are,
readers.
But that's what they should be. Anyway, so yeah, those are my two issues with it. First off, there's no reason to legislate the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment is part of the Constitution. It stands above any legislation. It's already there, and it protects all of us, not just these people with this particular profession.
Yeah.
And the idea of creating a carve-out for these people with this particular profession is in itself absurd.
Yeah.
Because it should protect everybody. Like, these are natural rights that were codified in the Bill of Rights, and there should be no legislation required to enforce it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
That's my rant about the Press Act.
We'll have to follow it and see where this is going.
Yeah.
See if it actually gets passed or not.
I'm trying to
think. What the implications are if it does.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what... I'm trying to think of what the no agenda theory was about the purpose. It had something to do with like essentially forcing disclosure of sources.
I mean, that would make sense.
You know, certainly the government gets very unhappy when information about their wrongdoing that they don't want public becomes public.
Yeah.
They don't have as much trouble with it when information about their wrongdoing that they want public becomes public.
Yeah.
Because then it was sanctioned.
Yeah.
Like, there's a huge difference in the way sanctioned leaks and unsanctioned leaks are handled in this country. Yeah. But on that note, actually, now that that Biden actually, I guess Biden has been convinced that maybe his ability to beat Donald Trump again is in jeopardy.
Yeah. Well, the polls would certainly indicate that.
Yeah, but
I mean, they're pretty neck and neck. But
he's kind of, he seems to be an arrogant fellow. This Joe Biden.
Imagine that.
Yeah. I mean, not to say that Trump
is. Trump, who's not arrogant at all. No air of arrogance there.
I'm not trying to create a contrast between these guys. It's a similarity, not a contrast.
Fair enough.
But it seems that maybe some people have finally gotten in. I keep saying actually. I'm trying not to. Sorry. have finally gotten into Biden's ear and convinced him that, yeah, he might lose.
Yeah.
And so now he's pulling out all the stops. And one of the stops that he pulled out is that he's considering dropping the charges against Julian Assange.
Oh, really? I have not heard this.
Oh, he won't.
No. Well, I haven't even heard that it was on the table.
it was just one of those. It's in the realm of, I will say anything, just give me your vote.
Well, I mean, he's absolutely in that mode right now. If you look, because I heard something the other day that he's talking about closing the border, which would be a step in that, like please vote for me. I'm trying to fix this problem I created.
And yeah, I've had 3 years to do this, and I haven't. But now that my re-election is in jeopardy,
yeah,
whatever makes you guys happy.
Whatever's going to get me votes. Same thing with getting tough with China. I know you had mentioned something about this, but I had heard this week that he's wanting to do some kind of tariffs on Chinese steel. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing. Like it's almost like he's like running to the right of trying to get to the right of Trump.
Yeah.
Which is just weird.
Both sides have been protectionist for a long time though.
Yeah.
The left is protectionist because they want to protect the unions.
Yeah. Which is what he was at some union thing when he announced this.
Of course.
So, I mean, that's not a coincidence. So,
well, we'll get back around to that. Let's talk at least briefly about Israel and Iran.
World War III?
I hope not.
Well, I obviously hope not, too.
Biden did at least come out and say, hey, look, if you attack Iran, we're not going to go with you.
And then they turned around and did it, right?
Oh, yeah. Israel attacked Iran this morning.
Was it this morning or yesterday morning?
Friday morning and the stuff I was reading.
Oh, maybe it was.
So this morning.
Oh, of course,
I may have heard about it
last night. So that's, because I was up pretty late. So, yeah.
All right. So let's back up again. We did talk, not on the last episode, but the episode before, about Israel's attack on the Iranian embassy complex in Damascus.
Which is where all of this started.
Yes. I would say that that was an unprovoked attack.
Unlike
the unprovoked Russian invasion of Ukraine. This actually seems to have been unprovoked.
Yeah.
Right.
We talked about this on the last podcast. When you attacking an embassy is the same as attacking the country.
Yes.
So when you're because they were going after somebody that was in the embassy.
Yeah, there was a general from the IRGC, the Iranian, special ops kind of guard corps.
Yeah.
And the Revolutionary Guard Corps. That was there, that presumably was the target that they killed.
Yeah.
Still, it's attacking an embassy.
Yeah. Well, that's my point. Yeah, the starting point of the story is that Israel attacked an embassy.
Yes. I actually want to go back even more because I kind of want to draw a contrast between the Israeli unprovoked attack on the embassy and the Russian unprovoked invasion of Ukraine.
Okay.
Because going back to 2008,
yeah,
and even more recently, so certainly since 2013, 2014, the U.S. and the Ukrainian government have been poking the Russian bear over and over and over again, just continuing to poke the Russian bear. And then when the Russian bear finally reacted to being poked over and over again, they said, oh, it was an unprovoked invasion.
Right.
But they'd been provoking him all the time. Now, unprovoked and justified are not the same thing, right? So I'm not saying that it was a justified attack. It was an unjustified attack also.
So I could walk around and just start poking you on the shoulder all day long?
Yes, and it would not be fair for me to slit your throat.
All right. Well, then I won't do it then.
Because that's kind of the point that I was going to make. Is that, like, if you go back even farther to when they were originally talking about Ukraine becoming a part of NATO, and then also, you know, moving some weaponry into Ukraine and overthrowing the Ukrainian government that was more pro-Russian and so forth. Russia was saying all this time, like, you can't do this. You can't do this because if you continue to do this, I'm going to be forced to react, and I don't want to have to.
Yeah.
But I can't let this thing happen. It's like, if I said to you, if you egg my house, I'm going to beat the hell out of you.
All right.
And then you go around and you egg my house.
Not only did I egg your house, I salted your yard too.
Okay. And then I beat the hell out of you. Yeah. Now, I don't think that beating the hell out of somebody for getting your house egged is justified.
Yeah.
But it also wasn't an unprovoked attack by me on you after you egged my house and salted my yard.
One thing led to another.
Yeah. First off, egging my house and salting my yard is a provocation, even if it's one that doesn't justify me beating you up.
Yeah, right.
All right. And the other thing is, I told you the whole time,
right,
if you do this, I'm going to have to do this.
Yeah. Which that is, to me, a big part of the problem here with with this incident with Ukraine in particular, is that we are just, as a country, not willing to listen to the other side at all. And that partly I blame that on our media, but I think ultimately the government is to blame. But like, I mean, there's no, like when Tucker Carlson went over there to talk to Putin, that was a big deal because nobody had talked to Putin from the U.S.
Yeah.
Like in this whole time period.
Here. Including Anthony Blinken.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like there's no communication here at all. And that leads to these type of issues.
Yeah. Including the chief diplomatic agent of the United States.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if we wanted to be so involved in what's going on in Ukraine, like the first thing we should have done was pick up a telephone.
Yeah. Well, okay. So then we come around to this Israel attacking the Iranian embassy. Now, what I'm frustrated about since then is, so that happened April 1st. Okay. On April, 13th, it was Saturday, right? So April 13th, Iran finally responds. They send up lots of drones and many missiles.
Yep.
They use slow-moving drones and enough missiles to get through, and they do some damage, but not any real significant damage.
Yeah.
Now, I would say that this was an attack that was planned to do very little damage, but to prove a point.
To show that you're not immune to being hit.
Yeah, that we can overwhelm your defense systems.
Yeah, yeah.
And they proved that they can.
Yeah.
They didn't do much damage, but then the media says, and then Iran attacked Israel this weekend. Well, okay, so if we go back to the original example, if you egg my house and I beat you up, I didn't attack you exactly.
Well, that's what I'm going to say.
I retaliated. I'd be like,
Mike attacked me for no reason.
Yeah, I retaliated against you, but the way the press is presenting it, it's like that attack on the embassy didn't happen. So the Iranians attacked Israel in response to, but attacked Israel. Yeah. Now, they will add that in response to because we all know better.
Yeah.
But then they say that on Friday, Israel retaliated against the Iranian attack.
Yeah. Yeah. When the last one was a retaliation, like.
Right.
Yeah. It's all propaganda.
Mm-hmm. It is. We've decided what side we're on. Yeah. And so we're going to use language specifically to promote the one side and to make the other side to seem like they're the bad guys.
Yeah. And again,
the other thing is that Iran had a very measured response that was intended not to do any significant damage, I think, because they're capable of doing significant damage if they want to. So they just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah. So I understand, you think they can penetrate the Iron Dome?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think that they can just overwhelm the defenses.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the point they were trying to prove.
Yeah. This is just a sample of what we can send over. Like because even our media is saying that they have the ability to send a lot more than what they sent.
Yeah. Yeah, so, absolutely. Hezbollah could send a lot more than what Iran sent.
Really? Okay.
Just themselves.
Yeah.
So the other thing is that Iran notified everybody beforehand.
Yeah, they
essentially.
Did. Including
Turkey, who's a NATO member, who dutifully reported it to the United States. Everybody knew this attack was coming and when.
Yeah.
They used kind of the least of their capabilities to do it. They announced that it was happening while it was, they announced it while it was still happening. They didn't even wait until it was over before they announced publicly that this is what we've done.
Yeah.
And then they also said that, and we consider the matter closed at this point, once again, before it was even done, to say, like, look, okay, we're just making a point to you here. Because you got to also remember that Iran has sat back and allowed Israel to do a lot of damage to them over the past many years, killing scientists, attacking nuclear sites, all kinds of stuff within Iran.
Yeah.
And they haven't responded. Yeah. And I think that they wanted to make it clear, like, there is a line at which we cannot let it go. We have to respond.
Yeah.
And you've crossed it now. So this is our response. And we can let sleeping dogs lie now. It's been tit for tat. Okay.
Yeah.
Neither of us have done really significant damage.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Yeah. Which they didn't.
Which they didn't.
Which that's what irritates me, because everybody was telling Israel, all right, let it go.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, more or less, that's what everything coming out of the U.S. was. Like, I know Biden had said that. Like, what irritates me about that, with them just being like, no, like, we are going to retaliate again, is that, like, it'd be one thing if we were just telling them that and being like, hey, you know, let's not go and do the, like, let's let it, like, leave it alone. This is good enough. We repelled everything, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But, like, we support them. Like, without us, their capabilities are drastically decreased without our support. So there should be some kind of line there where, okay, if we ask them specifically not to re-retaliate, they ought to listen.
Well, there's some truth to that, certainly. Now, part of the reason that I really dislike, well, I don't like subsidizing anybody.
Yeah.
I really dislike subsidizing Israel because I think that they're an oppressive state and that they're going to draw us into something that we don't want to be a part of, because they don't care.
Because of just what I laid out, the fact that when we ask them to be restrained, they will not do it.
Yeah. Netanyahu believes that he controls the U.S. government.
Yeah, and he's not wrong.
He can make a good case. That's certainly true. Yeah. There's a story. I'm trying to think if I can bleep this out or if I'll just... I'll just censor myself, I suppose. But there is a story that after a meeting between Bill Clinton and Benjamin Netanyahu, that after Netanyahu left, Bill Clinton said, does he know who the effing superpower is?
Yeah.
Or like, who's the effing superpower?
Yeah.
Right? Because, you know, Israel's the tail that wags the dog.
Yeah. Well, and that is what it is. Like, we may be the superpower, but, I mean, they got us by the whatevers.
Yeah.
Like, for whatever reason, like, I don't completely understand it personally.
Yeah. Well, that's among the things that has been pointed out here, is that through this series of actions, is that we helped defend Israel against a retaliation strike.
Yeah.
Right. We've also provided more support to them than we have Ukraine, which Volodymyr Zelensky seems to be really upset about. That we have worked harder to defend Israel than we have to defend Ukraine, like actively involved ourselves in operations to defend Israel where we haven't.
Yeah.
Done that against Ukraine.
Well now, Ukraine's just a side chick, though. Like
well, the real difference is that actively defending Ukraine puts us directly in a war with Russia.
Yeah.
And actively defending Israel could put us directly in a war with Iran.
Yeah.
Which
a good bit of the industrial complex has been bonering for a long time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of people.
A lot of money to be made in that war.
A war with Iran. Because it's a war with a power that doesn't have nuclear weapons.
Yep.
It would be a conventional war.
Yep.
Unless Israel goes nuclear, which is still a possibility.
Yeah.
Even though they don't officially have a nuclear program, they absolutely unofficially
nobody,
do.
Yeah,
everybody
nobody
knows.
Believes that they don't, yeah.
The opposite is true of Iran for some reason.
Yeah.
That everybody claims that they have a nuclear program unofficially when they absolutely don't.
Yeah.
Whatever, though, leaving that aside. I don't even want to go down that rabbit hole right now. There's lots to read about that. I would highly recommend if people believe that Iran has or ever has had an active nuclear program, by which I mean they were trying to construct a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
There was a point where they were researching the possibility.
Yeah.
But they have never attempted to construct a nuclear weapon and nixed the program before they got to that point. If you have any questions about that, go read Manufactured Crisis. Is that what it's called? I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Manufactured Crisis by Gareth Porter. It will dispel you of this myth.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a very convincing article. It's article, book. It's kind of dry, but there's a lot of information in there, and it kind of leaves you with no choice but to accept that Iran has never had a active nuclear construction program.
Well, my understanding is that they believe it goes against the tenets of Islam.
Yes. Yeah, both Ayatollah Khomeini and Khomeini has reinforced the idea that use of mass casualty kind of weapons like that, nuclear, biologic, chemical, goes against the tenets of Islam because it cannot not target civilians.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's almost good enough. I don't know. I mean, not that
it's a theocracy.
Well, that's the reason that I think that it's kind of, that to me that's kind of good enough because, I mean the fact that it's a theocracy kind of reinforces that that like they can't really be saying that if it's and be doing something different. Yeah. It's not like our government where they can just say one thing and do another and get away with it. Like they think their God's going to get involved.
Yeah, exactly.
And they believe it.
Speaking of, just a little side note here. Break things up a little bit.
All
right. We didn't really get to see the eclipse here because it was super cloudy when it happened. I mean, there were some breaks in the clouds, which were actually the clouds provided the perfect filter. You didn't need any of those little glasses or whatever. Like the clouds filtered it just perfectly so that you could see.
Yeah.
But watching people's reactions to the eclipse in an age where we completely understand how eclipses happen.
Yeah.
Was just it was very funny to me when you talk about a theocracy. Like you totally understand watching people's reaction in an age where we understand how it happens makes you really understand why they were like, you know, seeking virgins to sacrifice back in the old days because people were freaking out about
this. They get
this
worked
thing.
Up pretty quick, don't they?
It was kind of amazing. I mean, it's cool. Like it really is cool. But
yeah.
But wow.
Yeah. Dude, people are
this
like,
isn't a mystery.
Yeah. Groupthink is scary. I'll just say that.
Yeah. So anyway, it made me laugh. Like what I saw of it was neat to see. I've seen eclipses before. Yeah. I always think that they're cool because they're just kind of cool, but
you imagine living somewhere with like we didn't have any clue what was happening to the sun all of a sudden.
Yeah, like imagine this in sub-Saharan Africa or something like today even.
All right. Yeah.
Anyway, it's just kind of funny to see people freak out over something that's so perfectly understood. I mean, think about all the stuff that was going around about that this was a sign of the end of the world in a time where we understand what's going on.
Yeah, right. it's been foreshadowed.
Yeah. Anyway, off of that, right. Back to the Iran thing. So the purpose of all this is that Israel wants a war with Iran that we get involved in, that the United States gets involved.
By the way, they've wanted this war since the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't just all of a sudden isn't here. New. Yeah.
I don't think that they allowed the attack on October 7th to happen.
Yeah.
I think it was hubris. I think that they felt so secure that they just weren't concerned, and it bit them.
Yeah.
But never let a good crisis go to waste. This is an opportunity for them to, with tensions very high and with the U.S. absolutely involved and promising to be on their side no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Biden's saying one thing to the American voter right now about Israel because the left is so divided on this.
Yeah.
But to Netanyahu, he's saying, we got your back.
Oh, yeah.
He may be telling him, like, we don't approve of an attack of Iran or whatever, but he's pledging that we will put everything into defending Israel. And so what that means is, to Netanyahu, potentially, is like, all right, well, we can attack Iran with impunity with our own forces, because Israel is actually a rich nation with a very powerful military, all things considered.
Yeah.
For their size.
Yeah.
And we don't have to worry about the retaliations, because the U.S. will take care of that for us.
Absolutely. Well, and they want, that's a war they want to have anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And with the guarantees that we're going to back them in it, like, there's no reason for them not to retaliate. They'd be stupid not to.
Yeah. What's been interesting is kind of seeing how other nations in the Middle East have reacted to this. I got a cat that's tracking something over there. I don't know what he's after exactly, but he was following something.
Yeah.
So Jordan allowed the U.S. to use... I would say allowed the U.S. to use some of their defenses. They took down some of the drones and stuff that went through their airspace with the statement that they were protecting their own people.
Yeah.
But realistically, they were protecting
Israel. They knew where the things were going. Yeah.
Realistically, they were protecting Israel. I'm interested to see how the rest of the Muslim world reacts to Jordan siding with Israel and the U.S. on this.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia, despite the Abraham Accords and all that stuff, has been very purposefully neutral in all of this. Yeah. Has not gotten involved at all.
Really?
Yeah. Lebanon and Yemen reportedly launched their own missiles to coincide with the Iranian strikes.
Yeah.
As far as I could tell, not in a way that seems like it was coordinated with Iran, but that they saw it happening and they were like, all right, well, we'll launch some of our own stuff too.
Yeah. We'll throw in with you guys.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I'm kind of interested to see where the loyalties lie. This is terrible though, because it you know, becomes kind of like that World War I thing where everybody allies with somebody and suddenly it's a great big war. You're World War III.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm interested to see how all of the U.S.'s attempts at manipulating the loyalties in the region.
Yeah, kind of plays out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, like some like gallows humor kind of
right.
stuff. But anyway, I don't know. I am a little frightened about where this goes. I don't think that it gets out of hand, but it's all in the hands of Israel, and that frightens me.
Yeah, that's what worries me the most, because of all of the countries, they're by far the most reckless from what I've seen. Because they can be, because they know that at the end of the day, the biggest bully has their back. You know, that being us.
Yeah. And frankly, they're kind of the biggest bully in the Middle East. They're the only nuclear power in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And they know that.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
And so they feel like they can just push as far as they want. And if ever comes down to it, they'll just drop a bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because also everybody, you know, everybody that they might fight with is east of them.
Yeah.
Which is good news for them in terms of nuclear fallout.
Of how the winds blow.
Yeah, exactly. Like literally yeah. because of how the winds blow.
Right. Oh. That's an interesting, I didn't know that, but that's an interesting little tidbit yeah. there.
So. Yeah, I mean, they would have problems with Egypt.
Okay, yeah. So conventional bombs on Egypt, everybody else gets nukes.
Everybody else gets a nuke. So. And the U.S. would be like, well, you know, they...
Well, Israel has a right to defend itself.
Exactly.
God, I hate hearing that, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, I just... Oh, it irritates me.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
They have a right to defend themselves.
I agree with that, too.
Apparently, they also have a right to oppress a huge portion of their population and deny them rights.
Yeah.
And they have a right to claim territory that's not theirs in contravention of international law and maintain occupation of it for 50 years without any consequence. Right. Despite all of that, they have the right to have the Security Council support them.
And here we
are. By the Security Council, I mean the United States.
Yeah.
Because also, while the United States maintains that they would like to see a two-state solution as a resolution to this problem, the United States vetoed as the single no vote.
Yeah.
The Palestinian petition to become a full UN member last week. Or
oh, really?
Maybe it was this week.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. United States was the only no vote. The UK and somebody else abstained, and then everybody else voted for it.
Really?
Including France, by the way. But since the permanent members of the Security Council get veto, yeah. The US vetoed as the sole nay vote. Palestinian acceptance into the UN.
Wow. That's
even yeah. though we say that the two-state solution is the answer.
Well, it is.
That's just a lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that's where we are in the Middle East, I guess. There was something else you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so the hush money case is going on in New York for Donald Trump.
Right, oh my now. God, who cares?
Well, there was something I found interesting about it this week. So Trump's basically like in New York right now. So instead of like out on the campaign trail, like he's still doing campaign stops and stuff too, but spending a lot of time in New York. So while he's there, why don't he do a little campaigning? Why not? Right? I'm here. And he's like a native New Yorker, like he's a New York guy. So he went down to Harlem the other day.
He's such a native New Yorker.
Dude, it really like came out when I was watching some of the videos of him in Harlem. I don't know why, just something about it's like, dude, like this guy's comfortable here. Like he just seems like he fits in. Yeah. So, but yeah, so he was in Harlem and so he visited the bodega of Jose Abada, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that was wrongfully accused, or wait, he was the one who was robbed. And I'm just gonna read the thing.
Okay.
Trump visited Harlem bodega in New York City, where Jose Abada, probably pronouncing that wrong, a bodega clerk, was robbed, attacked, and ultimately wrongly accused of murder by a Soros-funded DA, Alvin Bragg, after being forced to defend his life. That's a Trump post, by the way. Okay. So just so you, the little Soros-funded things always slipped in there.
All right. Is this the guy who the guy went behind the counter and grabbed him to try and pull him out to apologize to his girlfriend or something like that? Is that that case?
I believe it is. Like, okay. I'm not positive, but what's interesting to me about this whole deal is that like New York's a rough place right now. Like New York's got a lot of problems with crime and
to the pre-Giuliani days.
Yeah. Well, basically,
not that I support Giuliani.
But it's funny that you mentioned that, though, because I don't think Trump mentioned Giuliani specifically, but in those videos where he was talking to the press, like, he was very, like, Giuliani-like as far as, like, we're going to clean this city up. Like, if I'm president, things are going to change here. And he, of course, Alvin Bragg is the prosecutor that's prosecuting him right now. In his case.
That's a savvy political move.
It's a very savvy political move because the guy that's going after me is not protecting you.
Yeah.
And is actually, in a lot of cases, when you try to protect yourself, going after you. Mm-hmm. It's just good politics.
What was the guy that was accused of murder for killing that guy on the subway that was threatening people? Do you remember that case? The guy was a vet, I think.
Yeah.
He'd definitely been in the armed forces. He may still have been active. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But he ended up choking the guy to death on the subway that had been threatening other people, and then he was accused of murder.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Charged with murder.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, like I say, it's, I don't know, I just kind of wanted to draw attention to kind of what's going on with Trump right now.
Well, I mean, you know, and that's fairly typical government as far as I can tell, in a lot of, especially in heavy blue cities.
Yeah.
Is that we're not going to protect you and you're not allowed to protect yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And people aren't going for that. Like,
no, why would anybody go for that?
But it
unless you're a criminal.
Yeah, if you're one of these lefties that just can't seem to figure out why Trump is polling so well, like, this is it. Like, this right here, like, just him going to Harlem. And by the way, like I say, I know it was like a planned campaign stop or whatever, but he could barely speak to the reporters and stuff for the shouting of just constantly the whole time, every time he would speak, like, overwhelming in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's something to that. Like, because it's not like he was in particularly friendly areas. It's not like he was down south here somewhere.
Can you imagine if New York voted Trump in the 2024 election?
I mean, I don't want to go out on a limb and say that that's what's going to happen, but I think he's going to have a good showing. And, I mean, you know, it's interesting. Like, the way politics is playing out right now.
If Washington State goes Trump, then we know that, like, the world is going to end. Right. That's a better sign than the eclipse.
Oh, yeah, right.
If Washington State votes Trump...
There's more scientific data behind that, right?
Yeah. Oregon, maybe, too.
Yeah.
Although, you know, okay, what's funny about it, it's, I mean, I guess it's just really like all the others, except maybe California. California actually has a huge just percentage of people throughout the state that are left wing.
Yeah.
We're wrapping up.
Geared towards me.
Oh, okay. He's like, where's your wife?
Yeah, exactly.
So Washington State, Seattle is very, very blue, obviously.
Yeah.
And there, I guess that there's kind of a mix throughout the state, but Oregon is a weird one to me because Portland is very blue.
Yeah.
But the rest of the state
but
isn't really.
Yeah, the Portland's kind of the outlier.
Yeah, it seems to me. I mean... I could be wrong about this. I've never lived out there.
Yeah.
So maybe I have it wrong, but like Oregon's like a logging community. You know, I just can't imagine that.
Not a lot of loggers for Biden.
that most of Oregon is rural. Yeah. And I can't imagine that rural Oregon is very left wing. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I can't picture that, but who knows?
But the concentration of the population is in Portland, and
they get the biggest say.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that's how New York works. Like, New York City dominates New York elections.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole lot of upstate New York that is left-wing.
Which is the reason him being stuck in New York right now with this case isn't bad for him.
Well, like I say, I mean, it's
given him an opportunity to do some campaigning in a city that he knows and is comfortable in.
Yeah.
Like I say, because that was watching the videos, that was my biggest takeaway. It's like he's at home here. Like mm-hmm. this is his place. Like, and he, it just oozes off of him.
God, he's such a New Yorker. So,
yeah.
That's a reason not to vote for him as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that concludes my weekly Trump report.
I was born in New Jersey. We don't like New Yorkers.
Oh, yeah. Is there a bit of a... Well, Dave Smith moved from New York to New Jersey,
yeah,
right?
We wouldn't like him.
Oh, yeah. So he's a traitor then?
Yeah. No. The transplants, they're not appreciated.
Okay.
Go back to New York.
Go back to New York. Fair enough.
Can't tell I'm from New Jersey anymore. I spent way too much time in the South.
Yeah.
Like, I never really picked up the New Jersey accent, but I didn't. There was a long time that I didn't sound like such a Southerner that I sound like now. Like my accent has definitely. I lived with a guy from Bremen, Georgia for years.
Yeah.
And that guy changed my accent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The West Georgia accent just sunk in. Like you couldn't.
Yeah.
Couldn't avoid it. Oh, well. Yeah. Nothing I can do about it now except move, I guess.
Just embrace it.
All right. So we've got like maybe 10 minutes. And we did talk about, briefly the protectionist stuff. I just wanted to talk about the protectionism thing because the story about protectionism in this country is that it saves American jobs and, you know, well, that's it, right?
Yeah, like, I mean that's the idea is that you're protecting good American jobs,
mm-hmm.
made in America.
And I just want to express to people what protectionism really does.
You mean it doesn't do that?
Oh,
protect people's jobs?
It does that.
Yeah.
It's special interest, though. I mean, it's not like it protects all American jobs. It's like saying that war is good for the American economy because they spend a whole lot of money into the, you know, military contractors.
I mean,
that doesn't help all of us.
I was going to say,
that only helps a select few people.
I think that there's definitely an argument to be made. That's kind of what our economy's hedged on now.
Yeah, that is the American economy, isn't it? What do we do best?
Well,
we
I asked you before the podcast what we built, and really, I guess that's the answer.
Yeah, we build missiles.
Missiles and warships, and warplanes.
Yeah, I don't even know that we're that great at that stuff. We could probably outsource that, do it cheaper and better.
All right, but we don't.
But we don't. Yeah, that's kind of the point, is that like, okay, sure, that that creates some American jobs in a very specific industry.
Yeah.
And the profits are absorbed by a very specific industry that uses those proceeds to produce things that aren't consumed in the U.S.
Yeah.
Which makes it a bleed on American wealth, actually.
Yeah.
So that's the problem with the military and industrial complex. With protectionism generally, you kind of have the same sort of things. It's not quite the same because sometimes you are producing products that are consumed within the U.S. And in fact, I guess a lot of times you're producing products that are consumed within the U.S. But what it does, though, is that it makes the price for all consumers in the U.S. higher.
Yeah.
And if you're talking about something like a steel industry,
then...
It also makes all the products that consume that product cost more, too.
Which is a lot when it comes to steel.
And you're propping up an American business that's not competitive. Yeah. And this is something that I complained about a couple of podcasts ago, I think, when we were talking about some economic stuff. And I said, you know, what you're doing is you're creating a situation where it is more valuable for a business rather than to improve their product and improve their prices to take the money that they do have and go lobby the government to prop them up.
Yeah.
And that's at your expense too, because it takes a bureaucracy to maintain whatever protectionist policies that you've got. So now your tax money is being used to protect a poor American business that would rather spend the money that it does extract from you to pay your politicians to extract more money from you to protect their business that they don't do very well because they're not competitive with the rest of the world.
Because they're using all their money to lobby instead of to
improve their product.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so, okay, sure, there's lots of things that can be produced cheaper elsewhere.
Yeah.
Well, then produce a better product here.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so one of the things that we complain about with China, right, is like, well, it's cheap, but it's crap. All right. Well, make a better one here. The problem is, and this is the example I was talking with my mom about this last night. The example I used was Japanese autos.
Yeah.
All right. So there was a time where you used to be able to say in this country, and it was a long time ago now, where you could say, all right, well, but the Japanese products are cheaper, but the American products are better.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Now the Japanese products are cheaper and better.
And they're better. Yeah. Yeah. Give me that Japanese
car. And so you end up with a bunch of import restrictions. So there's only so many Japanese autos that can be imported into this country every year, plus really high tariffs to make their prices higher so that the American companies that are producing a pork product at a higher price can compete.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead, they should just make a better vehicle.
Right. And you've also... like beyond, you know, as a corollary, I guess, to incentivizing them to spend their money on lobbying instead of improving their product, you make it so that there's no drive to be more competitive.
Yeah.
Like there's no reason for them to be more competitive because they're being propped up by government policy to protect their business.
Yeah.
And you can say that, all right, well, but what about those workers? And I get that. That's an understandable
concern.
Yeah. Thank you. Searching for a word there. That's an understandable concern. But why should we... So all resources are scarce.
Yeah.
Including labor.
Yep.
Why should we waste our labor laboring for a business that's not competitive instead of using that labor in a business... that is competitive.
Yeah.
So essentially you're drawing labor into an industry where it probably shouldn't be in this country.
Well,
and instead of that labor being used to do something that's really productive and helpful to Americans, something that we can produce at a lower price or a higher quality, they're languishing in a business that can only compete by artificially raising prices of everybody else.
Yeah. Well, or
limiting the supply of everybody else because there's import restrictions, like quotas and stuff.
Yeah. Right. No, the consumer loses at every end.
Yeah.
Because so now you're not letting as many of those foreign vehicles in or whatever, and the ones that we're making suck.
Yeah.
And there's no incentive to make them better.
And the price is artificially raised.
Yeah.
On all products.
All of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whether you're buying foreign or domestic.
Yeah. So the consumer's paying more for the product itself, and they're paying through taxes to maintain the bureaucracy, to maintain their higher price.
Right. It's government run amok.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's in all areas.
Mm-hmm. And if your concern is that, well, we just can't produce products at that price here, well, that's because of government too.
It is. Yeah.
Government has artificially raised the price of labor.
Yeah.
In this country through all the requirements on employers to provide this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
And it may sound good to you, but it's not. Yeah. Because some people get paid more because of this, but everybody pays more for the product.
Yeah.
So it's only a limited group that actually benefits from that side of it, from the increased wages and so forth.
Yeah.
It's a limited group that benefits from that while everybody else pays more for all their consumer goods. Wouldn't you rather get $2 an hour and still be paying 50 cents for a cup of coffee?
Exactly.
Than get paid $30 an hour, but pay $12 for a cup of coffee.
And that's kind of the point I was going to make, is that the reason all of this is in effect, it all goes back to the government devaluing the money.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the money wasn't devalued, there wouldn't be a reason to force employers to pay X amount.
Well, and the reason that they had to devalue the money is because that's the only way they can afford all of the bureaucracy to do all of this.
Yes.
Is by just printing more money.
Exactly.
And that creates inflation.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's It all goes back at the end of the day to the inflation. Mm-hmm. Like I say, it's but it's government run amok. I mean, it really goes back to just government getting involved in the market in ways that it just shouldn't be involved. Where if you had a solid libertarian society type society,
yeah,
like you just wouldn't run into these type of issues.
Mm-hmm. A problem that's created by government intervention in the market cannot be solved by government intervention in the market.
Yeah.
By further government intervention in the market.
You're just digging yourself a hole.
What we need that would improve everything. And it would take some time. There would be an adjustment period.
Oh, it'd be
bumpy.
Not
saying.
Yeah.
Just watch what's going on in Argentina.
Yeah. So I haven't paid that close.
We need to come back around to that.
Yeah, we should.
Maybe we'll talk about that on the next podcast. But
yeah.
There's already, like, there's been problems. Prices jumped.
Yeah.
But they're already, like, the market is already resolving a lot of the problems.
Yeah.
And that's what would happen here. If you just got government out of the way, get government out of the way and let people innovate and compete and produce.
Yeah.
And it would be a benefit to all of us.
Yeah. And it wouldn't take that long. It would be rough. I've always kind of figured like the first couple of years would be rough. Mm-hmm. Like, because all of the adjustments happening in the system and whatnot.
Yeah, as it finds its equilibrium.
Yeah, I feel like it would do it pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And then once it did, we'd be in such a more stable place.
Yeah. All government interventions in the market, none of them are ever, just like when I was talking about, oh, by the way. Okay, so I did get a note from somebody about Dow Chemicals, I think it was, competing with German companies and undercutting with prices. I think there was a misunderstanding on one side or the other, and I haven't really gotten to look into it about what I was claiming last week about companies cutting their prices to take a loss to get everybody out of the market.
To flush the market, yeah.
Address that next. I'm going to make a note. I'll address that next week, maybe too, because I haven't really gotten to look into the example that was given. Okay. So I appreciate that comment.
And further research is required.
Yeah, further research is required. I do really recommend people, if you want to get a message to me, to email me at michael@thelibertymike.com, because I do not check Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't.
It's just not.
I actually ran into the guy who sent the message the other day. It's the only reason I knew it was there.
You even knew it existed.
Yeah. Or I would find out tonight when we upload the podcast, the new podcast. So I guess I'm always a week behind if you're going to try and contact me on Facebook.
Yeah.
If you send me an email, I get that every day.
Yeah. And Michael actually checks his. He doesn't have 20,000.
I respond to them too.
Yeah. He doesn't have 20,000 unread ones.
I don't remember where I was going before I got sidetracked on that. I don't know. Something about what we need is a free market. That's the kind of the end result.
Yeah.
What we need is a free market. Just let people compete and produce and innovate and do what they can. And it was about the legislation, including because of the antitrust legislation, that the antitrust legislation is never used to benefit the consumer. It's always used to benefit special interests.
Yeah.
And that's true of all economic legislation, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be like the odd legislation once in a while in the reams and reams and reams of economic legislation that's out there. There might be a few that actually benefited consumers, but the people that get in there and get legislation pushed through are special interests that it benefits them, not you.
Yep, absolutely.
And that's what's true of protectionist policies as well. Like, even if you work in that industry, it doesn't actually benefit you.
Yeah.
We're just propping up bad business and at taxpayer expense.
Yeah.
So. Anything else? Because we're pushing over an hour now, so gotta wrap up.
I think we covered everything.
Alrighty. In that case, we'll be back next week on Friday again.
Yep. Oh yeah, we'll be Friday again.
Yeah. I gotta make some weird arrangements to make that work, but that'll be fine. I'll make it happen.
Okay.
So we'll be back on Friday again. Man, we may as well just declare that the permanent day.
I've been saying that, but.
I know, but I like to have the option of Thursday, and I don't like I don't like recording and then not releasing the podcast for a day just to hit the schedule. I know that that's beneficial for us in terms of numbers. I know that people like schedule their weeks around these things.
Yeah.
I get it. I understand. Podcast
listening, yeah.
But like we're topical. We, you know, we're talking about an attack that happened 14 hours ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't like holding things.
Yeah.
Even though I know that it probably benefits us in the long run, but that's not the point. Yeah. I mean, if you guys really want to listen to us, you'll listen to us whenever we put out a podcast.
Yeah. <right? laughs> Which will be on Fridays.
Come on, guys. All right. Well, but anyway, certainly next week is Friday.
Absolutely.
And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook, but don't send me a message there. Email me, michael@thelibertymike.com.
Or do it just to annoy him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I will get it. It'll just be a week.
It'll be a week, yeah.
Unless Liberty Larry tells me about it. But if it's a private message, he won't be able to.
Yeah. I don't have access to those accounts.
Nope. Because you're not the government.
No, I'm not. Not yet.
And I'm not technically a journalist, probably. So anyway, but yeah, we'll be back next Friday. You can follow us on Facebook, subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, Podbean, like and share, comment, subscribe. You can leave reviews, all those things. All those things help.
All the things.
And we really appreciate it. And but we'll be back next week when we finally get this right. And in the meantime, try to stay free.
Life's short, live free.
Ciao.
Later.